So this morning we did the festival ceremony commemorating Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of Compassion. In Japanese, Avalokiteshvara's name is Kanzeon or Kanon. In Chinese, it's Kuanyin. And the Sanskrit is Avalokiteshvara. Korean Buddhism, Kwannon. I think that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Sometimes the name has various translations. I like one that goes, Avalokiteshvara is the regarder of the cries of the world, she who hears and responds to the calls and cries of the world. The word compassion, when you kind of take it apart into its roots, means to be with suffering, with passion, with suffering. And Avalokiteshvara is one who hears the cries of the world. She will often be depicted in the iconography as sitting in meditation. The meditation posture up there. And to my mind, I was taught, and it's been my experience, that the practice of meditation it has an identity with is the same as compassion. Or one of the aspects of meditation is that compassion. We're with our own suffering, we are with the suffering of the world when we do meditation. And there is no. Our chief image of Avalokiteshvara in the temple, we have a shrine to the right of the main altar. That chief image has a really nice face, the kind of face that is expressing. Kindness and a bit of sadness at the suffering of the world, and in some sense, this it has a kind of forward movement to it, as if you can imagine that being depicted in that scroll, getting off the scroll and coming down and helping you. And so, in a sense, again, when we're talking about meditation and compassion. There is no separation between us and the suffering that we experience in our own body and mind, and that we see in the world, really. We are affected by the suffering that exists. One of the benefits of meditation is that we find a deeper place to be and a deeper relationship to that suffering, and we begin to see that it is impermanent and passes away. So, in a way, we relate to it from a more rooted place, and in that sense, we are not so much affected by the suffering that we feel, but there's still no separation between us and it. So Avalokiteshvara in the iconography again appears in many different forms. And in the scriptures, today we recited what we call the scripture of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, and that's the poetry version of a chapter from the Lotus Sutra about Avalokiteshvara, about Kanzeon. And in that chapter, it says that Kanzeon goes anywhere and appears everywhere out of compassion to hells, all kinds of different realms. In some sense, that scripture is a litany of all the different places that Kanzeon can appear for us and for all beings. So Avalokiteshvara, again in the iconography, appears in many different forms and appears in all places. Again, our chief image in that's up regularly in the temple has 1,000 hands, and is sitting on a lotus throne. And it is said that in each one of those hands there is also an eye. So, and that again represents that quality of appearing everywhere and being willing to do whatever needs to be done to help beings. I was trying to find a reference that somehow I came across many years ago and always stuck with me. I think it's from Dogen, but I couldn't find it. I think it's from the Shobo Genzo, where he's talking about an Abhidhamma analysis of time and reality, in which they say that each second is divided into something like 1,000 thought moments. And Dogen says, so that's the level of subtlety that in which we can make decisions. Each second divided into 1,000 thought moments. Quite subtle. And Dogen says, in each of those thought moments, the Buddha is reaching its hand out to you to help. And in some sense, that's Avalokiteshvara appearing everywhere and in all places, right down to the very kind of subtlest experience of life. So I couldn't find that reference, and I thought, well, maybe I imagined it. Maybe Dogen didn't really say that. He probably didn't say it in exactly that way. But is it true? Is it true? And certainly I could go through many scriptures and find references like that in the Avatamsaka Sutra and whatnot. But really, in my experience, I can't tell you that I'm aware of the 1,000 thought moments in a second. But whenever I have looked within and looked for that hand reaching out to help me, without fail, it has been there. And so the important thing for me in kind of that process of trying to find that reference was reaching out and taking that hand. Reaching out and saying, okay, I'll accept the Buddha's help in this situation. And in accepting the Buddha's help, that changes myself and changes circumstances. One of the ways of depicting Avalokiteshvara is with 1,000 hands and 11 heads. It's said that, again, the Buddha, the Avalokiteshvara, is affected by suffering. At one point, she was so moved by the suffering of the world that her head exploded. And when the Amida Buddha came and put her back together, he put her back together with 11 heads, seeing everywhere and helping everyone. She was apparently frustrated because she wasn't able to help enough. And gave her 1,000 hands so that she could be everywhere and help all beings. So, again, however, when each of those 1,000 hands has some implement in it, oftentimes, and those implements, while we may not know exactly what they are, what they mean, they mean that Avalokiteshvara is willing to help us in whatever way is helpful, is truly helpful. Sometimes that help comes with someone saying no to us. I remember being in a circumstance at Shasta with another one of my novices. There was some kind of little minor emergency busyness stuff going on. And I was headed somewhere on some mission for somebody, and she was headed somewhere else moving a garden cart full of eggs. And she was struggling with that, and she asked me to help her. And I had to say no, I'm sorry. And it was somewhat upsetting for her. And I've talked about my own experience with people saying no to me, and how that can be quite helpful in terms of my own ability to turn within and let go of my own inadequacy and see how to get on and accept what needs to be done and to do what needs to be done. So sometimes the help that Avalokiteshvara, the Buddhas and ancestors, give to us is not exactly the help that we would hope for. And when we step back from that and reflect on it, I realize that is just as it should be, at least for my own self. A lot of times what I want in terms of help would actually not be good for me to have. and comes from a place of desire, of greed, of misunderstanding about myself or the world. And so one of the difficult things that Avalokiteshvara does is be willing to say no to us. A characteristic of all of the chief bodhisattvas in Buddhism, Avalokiteshvara, Samantabhadra, Manjushri, Mahasthamaprapta, Jizo, Kanze, or Kishtigarbha, is that they, my understanding is that they are fully enlightened Buddhas in their own right, and they manifest in the world in different ways to help beings. What this means in terms of Avalokiteshvara, and the reason we recite the scripture of great wisdom today, is that she is in her own right a fully enlightened Buddha. She is deeply wise. She is the one giving voice to the scripture of great wisdom in the scripture of great wisdom. And that is a really important thing to remember. Her compassion isn't just grandmotherly kindness. It is compassion deeply rooted in an understanding of why suffering exists and how to help beings in a true way to come to let go of their suffering and convert their suffering. And it is useful to be aware when we go to Kanzeon. We can go to Kanzeon with complete and utter simple faith that the help will come to us. And again, this has been my experience. And we can do that from an adult perspective, knowing that that help will be wisely given, that will be helpful right to the root of us, not just kind of what we wish for in the moment. She's often depicted carrying the wish-fulfilling gem. And in our image here in this room, she has the wish-fulfilling gem and a vase of water. And that wish-fulfilling gem is the wish, is the gem which fulfills the wish to realize enlightenment, to awaken to the deep reality of life. That's the kind of deepest longing of a human being's heart. And when we follow Avalokiteshvara, when we follow her compassion, when we go to her for refuge, that is always in the background of what's going on. When I say that, it can kind of, well, yeah. I've often asked Avalokiteshvara for help, and there's always been a tone of kindness when that help arrives. So give it a try. All the forms, all of the ways in which Avalokiteshvara manifests itself in the world. The vase. So Avalokiteshvara is often shown depicted with a vase of water, often pouring the water out onto the world. And that water is the water of compassion. One of the images downstairs shows her kind of casually pouring it off to one side and kind of looking the other direction. To me, this is not accidental. She offers the water of compassion without discrimination, without worry about where it's going to go or who it's going to affect. It's just offered to the whole world. And that water of compassion is constantly offered, is just offered. There's a little statue downstairs, Avalokiteshvara floating in a lotus petal, leaning on a globe and pouring water onto the globe. Again, the water of compassion does not discriminate. It goes everywhere in the world. And in that sense, Avalokiteshvara represents the kind of grace, the compassion, the love of the Buddha, the wisdom of the Buddha just exists in the world. And that, in a sense, is, if you'll forgive me for using that Abrahamic term, a kind of grace in the world. It's just a gift to us. One of the sad things is that beings are unable to make use of it, and unable to turn around in their hearts and see that it is offered all the time. When we encounter the Dharma, we believe in it, we recognize in it some truth, some quality of reality in it. We are making use of that opportunity, that pointing out of that grace, of that quality of compassion that just exists in the world. When we put the Dharma into practice, we're turning our hearts around and enabling ourselves to encounter that reality, that compassion, that water of the Spirit that exists in the world. And so, in one sense, enlightenment, compassion, the water of the Spirit is available to all beings, and we must do the practice in order for us to see it, do the practice in some way. I like that scripture, that little hymn that we sang, "You Weep in All the Sorrows of the World," where it says, you know, people say they don't really know compassion, but for all that, they know it pretty well. Because in some sense, we are all doing some kind of practice. We're all, in some ways, turning toward Buddha nature, whether we see it or not, and asking for the help of the Buddha. The more we do practice in a kind of formal sense, the more we can clarify that for ourselves and be able to see how it manifests in all circumstances. Now, I've been talking mostly about receiving compassion in the world, how we come to encounter it in our own suffering, and how we can have faith that it is present in the suffering for other people. But there's another way in which Avalokiteshvara is important for us. And that ties into the practice of the Dharma. Buddhism, its founding principle, its founding idea, its founding impulse is the impulse of compassion. The Buddha, as we probably remember, was a well-to-do person, came from a well-to-do family, and was quite sheltered. He had pretty much everything that he could want for in life. And was really not suffering. He really hadn't encountered suffering until he was 30. What was it? 36, 30, somewhere around there. When he happened to sneak out of his palace. And that was, interestingly, the first time he'd encountered suffering. And it wasn't his suffering, he saw the suffering of someone else. And his impulse to find a deeper truth came from that observation. Not even his own experience of suffering, but from seeing the suffering of someone else. So he was concerned about the suffering of others, and that's really what started his search for the truth and continued to motivate his being willing to, after awakening, being willing to teach in the world. So compassion, the compassionate wish, is really right at the root of the Dharma. And so part of our following the path is in some way becoming Avalokiteshvara, is putting the example and teaching of Avalokiteshvara into practice for ourselves. So, you know, the classic thing is you come to the temple and the first thing you're taught is how to put your shoes straight so that they don't kind of get in someone else's way, so that you're taking care of your shoes. And that, right from the beginning, is an act of compassion. We're changing ourselves to conform to give expression to the kind of compassion within us, the wish to keep others from suffering and to help ourselves with suffering. So we receive abundant blessings from Avalokiteshvara and is a refuge in that sense, but it also becomes a refuge in the deeper sense where we are becoming like Avalokiteshvara. And as part of the Sangha, the more we embody the teaching of Avalokiteshvara in our own life, we become a refuge for others as well, just in the way that good human beings help to support one another. So the practice of Avalokiteshvara is not really just all about receiving compassion, but is also the giving of compassion, the activity which promotes compassion in our own life and offers compassion to others that we encounter. And that's really how we can come to have a deeper understanding of Avalokiteshvara. But also, one of my teachers, since passed away, used to say, if you really want to experience wisdom, if you really want to experience awakening, is what he was saying, practice compassion. Compassion is really the start of where the Buddha's wisdom comes from. It's really the start of where the Buddha's awakening came from. So if we wish to understand the deeper aspects of practice, we really have to start with compassion. We really have to start with, you know, kind of asking ourselves, well, how am I creating suffering? And begin to work on that. How am I creating suffering for myself? But also, how am I creating suffering from others? And begin to work on that. And that's really the beginning again of the path toward the awakening of the Buddha. So that's what I had to say today, and I really appreciate you all coming and helping celebrate the festival of Avalokiteshvara, one of my favorite bodhisattvas. To me, the bodhisattvas, I try to think of like I'm living in a world in which the bodhisattvas are living things, and I find Avalokiteshvara a kind of indispensable friend in the world, and go to her for refuge as much as I can. So thank you all. And any thoughts or questions or observations or ideas?
We did, what is it called, the litany of the one you don't hear very often.
Oh, the scripture of Avalokiteshvara.
Yeah, the scripture, yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the Abbey, they do that in early in the morning before for meditation.
Yeah.
And on occasion, at least they allowed it at one time, you could go there and sit in the dark. Early in the morning in the darkness, and it's not done, you know, with lights on and stuff. It's done very quietly.
Yes.
And so to hear that, it's just a beautiful, beautiful experience. I don't hear it that often because we don't do it that often, but it's amazing how it goes through. It's like you're sitting there and thinking about all the ways that you might get yourself into a real spot.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and very practical in that way. You know, it's quite interesting. Anywhere from political prisoner to poison to falling off, you know, whatever. You know,
yes.
When I first heard it a long time ago, I thought, God, that's interesting. It's not theoretical. It's just really looking at different situations and. Realizing that when you're in a tough spot like that, what's good about the scripture, I think, is when you're in a tough spot like that, that's the place, that's what you, it helps, that's what's good to be thinking about.
Yes.
You know, even if it's your last breath, you know, especially. You know.
Yes.
So it's wonderful to hear.
There was a, there's a thing which I've encountered, or I've heard of from a couple of different places where the example of the Tibetan monks in China who were found themselves in really kind of being treated in a very kind of beastly way by the Chinese. I mean, you know, a kind of unimaginably bad way. And I've heard a couple of those monks say, well, the thing I was most worried about was that I would lose the mind of compassion in the midst of that. And in a way, you can kind of hear that and think, wow, and rightly think, I think, wow, that person is really saintly and advanced and quite an example of great practice. But it really struck me a little while ago how there's also that exact kind of practical quality to it, that when we lose our mind of compassion, we tend to fall into anger or hatred or some kind of criticism or judgmentalism or wish for something other than what we have, delusion. We fall into trouble, difficulty, and by holding on to that mind of compassion for themselves and for others, there's a real protection in that, a real protection for the person not to create more suffering for themselves. And that's not to say that the situation was not totally awful and in some sense, in kind of reasonable human life should not have been happening, but more to say exactly what you're pointing out, that there's a real practicality to holding on to that mind of compassion, being aware of the teaching of Avalokiteshvara there. In some sense, it brings you through that difficulty without making it worse. And quite likely, in my experience, has been helping you to see ways to actually make it better.
There's there's also a story, recently I've heard it a couple of times, but I can't remember where one of the monks in Tibet, I think it had set themselves on fire. What do you call it? But
self-immolation.
And they said that no, they wanted to visit him. He was about ready to, you know, die. And so what did he say? So apparently we were able to share that. And he said, the main thing the Dalai Lama says, he says, don't take your hatred to the other side.
Mm.
Yeah. In other words,
yeah.
Turn it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really great advice. And that whole thing about self-immolation, I can understand why it would be done and why someone might choose to do that. I would not recommend it. And interesting how the Dalai Lama indicated there that the person who was burning themselves was angry. And
was what?
Angry. And doing that out of anger. So the more we hold on to anger, the more we hold on to the three poisons, the more our suffering compounds and increases. And really, the compassion of the Buddha saying, we don't have to do that. There is a deeper refuge there. There is a deeper refuge. There is a deeper way to handle these things in the world. There is a more positive way to handle this oppression in the world. To hold on to hatred just begets more hatred. And it is the teaching of Avalokiteshvara that we can, again, this comes back to Avalokiteshvara and meditation, we can let go of that hatred. We can let go of that anger. And he, to his credit, I really have a lot of admiration for the Dalai Lama. He's always, I don't imagine that he's like totally a saint. I'm sure he makes mistakes as a human being. But his simple, the thing that he gives, I remember seeing him in a big public lecture. And it was just so impressive to me how he comes out on stage and the first thing he does is three bows to the Buddha on the stage. Turns his back on all the people, does three bows to the Buddha. And that kind of humility, that kind of being willing to put the teaching into practice, is such a great kind of example in the world. And his kind of down to earth, just continuing to do the practice in faith and humility is just such a kind of a great example to the world, I think. And he really embodies the mind of Avalokiteshvara. Satisfactory. Thank you all very much. Yeah. Please have a good day.